you're a CEO, you know, how do you know you need a coach and what is a coach? So let's start with, what is a coach? Is it like the coach of a basketball team? Or when this person was asking you, would you be my coach, now that you had gone out and figured out what it is, how would you describe what a coach is, what a CEO coach is?
Well, it starts with just being a trusted confidant. As you know, having been a CEO, it's one of the loneliest jobs that exist, because when you're challenged with serious things that you have to figure out or things you have to do, as you're figuring it out, not when you figure it out, but as you're figuring it out, you can't really bring those big question marks and insecurities to the team. You can't bring those insecurities to the board, and you certainly don't want to bring it home to your spouse. So, the question is, you know, you don't want to just do too much internal thinking. So just having someone to really use as a sounding board to bounce ideas off of, to create a safe space to explore any problem, issue, or opportunity in front of you, and have that person hopefully have some degree of expertise to help you see things very, very clearly as to what the situation is and what possibilities exist. That's kind of what a coach is. It's not a consultant who comes in and says, I have this expertise, I'm going to look at your situation, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do. A coach doesn't tell someone what to do. A coach points out opportunities and areas for improvement and gets you to see things more clearly and more broadly without filters that might get in your way, and then helps you figure out how to go execute on it.
Hmm. So it's not a consultant and it's not a mentor. It's almost like a confidant, a consigliere, if you will, if you use the...
Yeah, a little bit of that. There's certainly a lot of mentorship in there and advisory work in there. Mentors are tremendous. Advisors are tremendous. Typically, you bring an advisor on board because they bring a certain expertise to the table that's helpful to augment what you're doing. Mentors are great when every now and then, hey, let's go grab a coffee every once a month and have a discussion. I want to bounce some ideas off you. Those are great. Coaches tend to be a more regular thing. For instance, I meet with my CEOs every single week for about an hour. And that regularity enables you to have a certain level of understanding of the individual, the situation, the business, the board, the products, the team, the culture. That familiarity gives you an opportunity to help them set forward the things that they say they're going to do and hold them to a certain degree and hold them accountable to delivering that. It's a very close, important, trusted relationship that, to be perfectly frank, had I known about it, I would have loved to have had it when I was a CEO.
Yeah. No, I was fortunate to have a coach in my last company. I was looking for someone initially who could teach me about the industry that I was going into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this person was certainly very helpful in that regard too. But ultimately, our relationship evolved to more of a coaching relationship. And, you know, he really helped me to, as you said, find a place to take all the things that were happening in my head,
right,
and put them out in a safe place,
as ugly as they may be,
right, and right. Deal with the thorny issues that you have to deal with as a CEO, and
exactly.
It's just a valuable relationship to have with someone who is not a peer, not a co-founder, not a spouse or a partner, that really understands what it's like to be in your seat, and you can have a real conversation with.
Yeah.
So tell us how you approach those types of conversations. How long have you been doing it for now?
It's been full time for about 10 years and part time quite a bit longer than that.
Wow, that's great. Mm-hmm.
I know, John, you were in a peer CEO group, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, I was.
I was as well. I think it was actually the same one at different times.
Yeah, yeah.
That also, as a foundation for helping other CEOs, that was, we got together, it was every quarter for 2 full days a quarter. So big commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Typically with 7 other CEOs, we had eight people at the table, and each one bringing their toughest issue to the table every single time. So over the 8 years I did that, there was about 250 samplings of everything you could possibly go through in growing a Series A company to liquidity. And having that as background is pretty tremendous. I'm sure you found that useful as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I find is, even though I was fortunate to have access to that CEO forum, that kind of CEO group, peer group, which I think is extremely valuable. You still need the coach, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I did. I felt that I did.
The regularity, again, back to the regularity and the trusted space. And I focus almost exclusively on Series A and Series B venture-backed technology growth companies. Mm-hmm. So in those environments, every 6 to 12 months, the job almost fundamentally changes. Right. And you have to change with it, or you have to grow with it. The bar just keeps getting raised. So the level of frequency is pretty important. And the other thing is just the opportunity cost of not knocking down a problem now as opposed to a month or 2 months from now is just too huge when you're growing that fast.
Let's talk a little bit about how you approach the coaching. How do you go about coaching a CEO? What's the first step?
First step is making certain there's a relationship that works. So before you enter into a coaching relationship as a CEO, I'd encourage you to absolutely meet with the person, get a visceral sense as to whether there's a connection there, whether you can trust this person, whether this person gets what you're saying. So then as a coach, the inverse of that is the CEO really... Are they self-aware enough? Are they the type of people that want to learn and want to be substantially better than where they are right now? Are they defensive in their positions, or are they inquisitive as to wanting to understand why? So step one is there a match? Are they coachable? So once you get past that, my first step is doing an assessment. And that assessment oftentimes can either be a self-assessment by the CEO or even a 360 assessment of the CEO, board, and executive team. I've got 10 dimensions of what I'll call a prototypical perfect CEO, even though one doesn't exist. But it gives us a foundation of knowing, you know, where we feel we're strong, where we feel there are gaps in terms of areas that we need to be developed. And then based on where the stage of the company and where we are, we co-develop a development plan for the CEO that says, here are the primary areas we want to work on over the next 6 to 12 months that with clear, actionable things we can be doing.
So you do the 360 survey, you send it out to the board, the CEO's direct reports, et cetera. And do you go one level below the management team, or you stop at the management team?
I stop at the management team.
And that comes back, and then you get a picture of sort of potential problem areas, perhaps? Or
it's going to be things like some people, the board interactions, the relationships are outstanding and natural for them. Others, they just have no idea what the level of communication needs to be and what types of things you're going to be talking to a board about. Others are really, really, really great at defining and building a cadence of how to manage the company. Others just have no idea early on as to how do you set long-term direction? How do you provide clarity of path to get there? How do you do organizational design? How do you build the right team? How do you define culture that works for you? How do you facilitate driving alignment and empowerment and accountability deep into the organization? So it's not as if there's these people are deficient. It's just that they maybe haven't done it before, or they haven't focused on it before. And at different stages of growth of the company, certain things are more important than others.
Interesting. When would you say a CEO knows they need a coach? Like, how would you... If you were talking to a CEO and they were questioning whether they need a coach, how would you answer that?
I'll ask you a different question. Mm. What sports do you like?
Golf.
Okay.
And ballroom dancing.
Great. Okay.
Latin ballroom dancing.
Great. Okay. Awesome. So both of those, can you imagine anyone who's top of their game? Not people who don't know what they're doing and they need a coach, but anyone who's actually very, very good and wants to be better that doesn't have a coach in any field whatsoever.
No.
Non-existent, right?
I can't think of one.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's so strange for people to think of, well, it's like it's a problem that someone needs a CEO coach. It's almost the other way around. If you're really good, you want to get better. And actually going from really good to off the charts amazing is a tougher set of steps than being pretty bad to okay, right? And the benefit of the people I work with, which I am blessed to work with these folks. They tend to be CEOs of Series A, Series B venture-backed companies by top venture firms. Those folks have already vetted the market, the technology, the product potential, and most importantly, the CEO and the leader of the company.
Right.
So they are smart. They are driven. They have they have a vision, and these aren't really deficiencies. These are just skills that need to be developed based on where the company is and what they have to achieve.
Got it. And so to play that back,
everyone needs a CEO coach.
Everyone needs a CEO coach.
But I will,
especially if you're a CEO that wants to be better, right? If you are focused on mastery,
yes,
then coaching is the way to get there, right? I mean, you look at any sport.
I think it's a better way to say that. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you are a CEO and you are very happy with your business and you're growing 5% a year and you get a certain level of attrition, you just hire to backfill that attrition and you're happy, maybe you don't need one because you're quite complacent. But I don't know any CEO. I don't know any CEO that's complacent. Every CEO that I know, they are driving for 100% growth next year and to transform the world and a market in a significant way. And those people are ripe for having someone to really help them out.
When you're coaching, what would you say you're trying to do exactly? I understand you do the assessment, then you start getting to work because you see opportunities. But what are you ultimately trying to get to with the athlete, if you will?
Great. So, can I back up and just talk about, there's almost two types of coaching that I do. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So, when I started coaching, I would do what I would call mostly situational coaching, meaning mm-hmm. we would do an assessment of kind of where we want to develop and where's the business and what do we have to accomplish. But then it was almost on a week to week basis, what's working and what's not working. Right? Either something mm-hmm. that happened that didn't go the way that you'd particularly wanted it to go. So we can mm-hmm. kind of tear it apart, take a look at it and say, why did it go that way? How could it have gone differently? And how might we do it differently? Is a very good place to learn, kind of situationally seeing the play, where you were positioned, how you played it out, and what mm-hmm. could have been done differently. And that works looking backwards in reverse. It also works in terms of situationally looking forward. I've got this major event or opportunity or problem in front of me and helping think through it. And again, that situational basis of all the things that that you might do and how you might do it. But every now and then, any individual is going to be constrained in terms of how they see the world and how they see the facts in front of them. And it's just the reality of all of us have come to the world with our own histories, biases, traumas, cultural upbringings and perspectives. And all those things over time put filters on how we see things. Right. And those filters do two things. Sometimes they blind us from facts. And so one of the most important things as a coach you can do is make certain that you're seeing the facts clearly. Right. The other thing that it does even more so than blinding you from facts is oftentimes is it has you build a story around those very few facts that is just a story. Right. And so, here's the three facts and here's the 17 other components I'm throwing into it to create a story around it, which makes me think that we need to do A. And mm-hmm. if you can help tear that back a little bit and help that person see, well, no, the facts are really here. That story is valid, but there's probably three or four other valid stories on those same facts that open up whole new possibilities. And those new possibilities allow you to do really amazing, great things. So part of the everyday workings is helping them see things more clearly, identify opportunities that they may not see otherwise in terms of approaches, and then help them with how to go execute on that. So that's what I'll call transformational coaching. There's situational coaching, and then this is transformational. The transformational is what in your history is getting in your way of seeing things the way you need to see them or opening up your mind to new opportunities. How do we get past that? And then what new opportunities does it bring to the table? And then how do we go leverage and execute on those? So that's kind of this observational in terms of inconsistencies. There's the really probing as a coach with very powerful questions that surface things. And then the other skill that's pretty critical for a coach is being fully present and listening very proactively.
Mm. So if you relate this to sort of coaching an athlete or for a sport, there's the coaching that's focused on technique, and you know, you got to do 1,000, you got to practice 1,000 free throws, and
yeah,
you got to focus on
repetition and being outstanding.
Yeah, repetition and being outstanding. Yep. So you know, bringing it back to business, it's the CEO habits, the structure, the processes, that sort of
the
thing.
The one-on-ones, the executive team meetings, the company meetings, the quarterly plannings. Right. Yes, exactly. Right.
And one CEO forum I was part of, we called it the operating system, you know,
exactly.
get them to master that, being a good manager. Mm-hmm. But then there's the transformational coaching, which is really about the individual, the person who is in the CEO seat and getting them, preventing them from, but it seems like getting in their own way,
letting their head get in their own way. And it's funny. And when you do think of like the very, very top athletes, what normally gets in the way is not the operational execution of the swing. It's what's in their head. It's something throwing them off.
The voice in their head, pulling them back.
You got it. Overthinking something.
Yeah.
It's not directly related, but it's very analogous. Yes.
Hmm. And so the CEO coach becomes the other voice, mm-hmm. not in your head, but in front of you, that's saying, "Hey, you're overthinking this," or this is you getting in your own way again. And that realization can then help the CEO sort of transform, if you will, and see opportunities differently.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I remember coaching early in my coaching career. I remember coaching people, and I'd have these really brilliant CEOs know exactly what they needed to do, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't do it. And then they wouldn't do it. And so, God, I'm missing something here. What's going on?
Right. Yeah.
I literally went back to school in my old age here. I went to, I studied with this guy named Julio Olalla, who was an older Colorado, who was one of the very first people in the life coaching field, and lots of touchy-feely stuff, but it was pretty amazing in terms of augmenting what I had in terms of skill set and kind of having a few more tools in the toolbox.
I see. Because you were seeing a mismatch between their ability and what they actually did. So that you said there was a blocker there.
There was some blocker that had nothing to do with them knowing exactly what they needed to do. Exactly. Yep.
So interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how many CEOs realize that is true, right? That self-realization can be very challenging, where you know exactly what to do, but for some reason you're not doing it,
and something's getting in the way.
You're not realizing why.
Oh, you know the feeling. I know you've been there.
Yeah.
You know the feeling. Yeah, I know the feeling, right?
I've been there so many times, and you know, it's taken me years to realize, and through the process of being coached, to realize what was going on.
Right.
Now, in your practice, do you get involved with the rest of the executive team as well? Because let's say the CEO knows what to do, but then he's got to translate, or he or she has to then get the rest of the team to execute, right?
Absolutely.
And then those individuals may have their own challenges that are both situational and transformational, right?
Right. So my primary focus is on the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if I'm jumping in because the CEO is not capable of doing something, I'm not doing that, you know, him or her a service, right? Mm-hmm. Versus help them do it. But the areas that I do get involved in is that we're talking about kind of foundational components. If you're throughout a company's life cycle, defining the long-term mission and vision and understanding kind of the market dynamics and the core strategy, the key strategy is going to enable you to get there, and then driving that into kind of the corporate goals. That process involves the entire team, usually the high level mission vision from the CEO, but the rest of it involves the executive team. So I get involved usually by facilitating, you know, the annual, typically 2-day executive team offsite that reviews kind of strategy and where we're going and how we're going to get there. And how do we drive those into very measurable things we have to do this year? So I get involved with the team that way. I also get to know the individuals. So when I talk to the CEO, I have a different vantage point in understanding the team dynamics. And occasionally there's, especially with earlier stage companies, there are oftentimes co-founders. One of the co-founders tends to elevate to a CEO. And then there's one or two others sometimes. And the founder dynamics are interesting. So many times I might coach the CEO and a co-founder, or the CEO and a couple of key executives on the team that either need some assistance or just kind of like make up the real brain trust of the tighter leadership team.
Are you currently making the transition from founder to CEO? Are you a first-time CEO in the middle of a huge challenge? Or are you just curious about what it takes? Then you need to read CEO Playbook. It's an online publication full of stories from real CEOs and practical sage advice for leaders of high-growth companies. Go to ceoplaybook.co to start reading some amazing content for free. You'll find out why over 400 CEOs go here to learn what it's really like being CEO.
Bob, the reason I asked the question is, in my experience, each of the management team members is kind of like a mini CEO of their functional area.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right? Yes.
And to some extent, maybe I should phrase this as a question. Do you believe the CEO is also, the role of the CEO is also to be a coach to the management team members? And if so, do you spend time teaching them how to be coaches, or do you find that unnecessary?
Absolutely. John, what do you think on this one? Just curious.
I think absolutely. Yes. I think that one of the skills, at least in my experience as CEO, is that over time, what you're trying to become really good at is helping people develop mastery, right, in their own roles. Mm-hmm. You're mastering yourself in your role and being in the CEO seat, but all those little mini CEOs out there also have to develop mastery. And serving as their coach and confidant is a very powerful position. Very challenging to sort of, you know, differentiate between your executive role, like, hey, I'm telling you to do this, to, hey, actually, I don't want to tell you to do anything. I just want to ask you a few questions to help you think about this. That's what I've been learning.
Yeah, my sense is that managing anyone, whether it be at an executive level or even at any tier, is shifting more and more to coaching. It's less directive and more, what are we trying to achieve? And then not being at all prescriptive in terms of how to achieve it, but really helping them define the path to achieve it and then helping them support them in making that happen. So I think overall, the whole management function is shifting more and more towards incorporating coaching concepts in their weekly one-on-ones.
Is that what's becoming known as servant leadership and concepts like that, I would imagine.
Sure. Don't mistake being a servant leader as not being a strong leader also.
Right, right.
It's a strange thing. It's kind of like, they'll let you hold on to it, the tight, the tighter the grip you have on it, sort of.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's the best leaders are ones that aren't controlling, but are the energy and enthusiasm and support and caring of the team pulls it together.
That's great. Are all CEOs coachable? You said you do a match test first. Is that about testing for coachability?
That's for me, it's testing for coachability, and for them, it's testing for alignment
with you.
Yeah, and the answer is no. They're CEOs, they're not coachable. Sorry.
Right. And what would you say? The transformational aspect, kind of, getting out of your own way, is the number one thing CEOs struggle with in their journey to mastery, or is there more?
It's so individualistic. Some things that are so easy to some people are so hard with others. For instance, I've got this one CEO that I've been working with him since the company was really small, and he is outstanding. I mean, not good. He's outstanding. Top 1% of 1%, right? Mm-hmm. And yet, again, I clearly can't see who this is, but his history and upbringing and relationships make it really, really hard for him to accept praise and therefore to give praise. So imagine being one of the top CEOs and having a hard time recognizing people for doing really good stuff, right? So now, by the way, he's outstanding and he has fixed that, and it's a learned behavior that's uncomfortable for him.
Right. Yeah.
But it's a critical one, and he's good enough to have perfected it, but as a learned behavior and not a natural one. So it's hard. So there's no one thing. It's every person brings something different to the table that they need help with. Right. They need to learn.
To your earlier point, everyone is wired differently. They have different backgrounds, culture, yep. et cetera.
Right.
And
right.
so therefore their opportunities, as you put it, are going to be different.
Right.
What's the one thing that surprises you about CEOs?
They're both extremely confident and extremely insecure. It's just a very interesting balance many times.
Have you encountered imposter syndrome a lot?
That's pretty much what we're talking about here. Absolutely.
Is it consistently present or just stages of development of a CEO? Like are first timers have more imposter syndrome, or more experienced people have more imposter syndrome?
I think it is every step of growth. People I work with are growing their companies typically 100% a year. Mm-hmm. Their individual contributors going to managers. Their managers going to kind of manager of managers. They are to eventually lead, to eventually sit at the helm and kind of guide the ship. And every step of the way, the job is changing. And every time the job changes in a big way, it causes one to ask questions about things. So again, I don't think it's overly significant. I think it exists, but I do think it exists in pretty much everyone.
And how do you help your CEOs work through that?
Again, I don't think it's overpowering in any way. I think it's just literally almost just having, I don't even think you have to be a great CEO coach. I think you could just be a really great, trusted listener and let them talk it out to the point where they realize, you know, I got this. Because they do. They really do, usually. you feel that way because you sometimes get to the point of feeling overwhelmed because I haven't done this before. I don't know the situation before. But once you just sit back, relax a little bit, think through logically what you need to do, what the options are, and which option makes most sense and how to go execute on it, you're ready to go again.
Got it. That's great. It is so true, though, that it's something you have to work through. And sometimes you have to be reminded of your abilities by an external party, right? Because again, those voices in your head kind of thing.
Sometimes just as simple as, you know, you got this one.
Yeah.
That's it. I do. Yeah, you're right. I do. I got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's sometimes as simple as that.
Are there do's and don'ts in coaching, right? So one of them is not to coach in a fashion that basically has you all in the business and yep. effectively doing the CEO's job. Are there some others, do's and don'ts?
You know, it's like a doctor relationship. Mm-hmm. For you to have trust, nothing ever goes anywhere else. Nothing ever. Yeah. You have to, I mean, there are boundaries on a personal level, but not, to be perfectly frank, I mean, it's just, you're building this trusted relationship. You're there fully to support them in any which way they need it. And by the way, and that oftentimes is both on a business level and a personal level. These are whole people. Sometimes right. The personal side is more impactful on the business than the business side. So there's very little that's off the table outside of maintaining confidentiality and making sure that boundaries that should be there don't get crossed.
Got it. And if you were to, this is kind of a part of the conversation where I kind of give you the stage, if you will. If there was something you wanted to tell those CEOs out there who, number one, didn't realize what a coach is and whether they need one or not, but maybe are just getting in the role or they're sitting in their seat right now listening to this, what are some things you'd want to say to them?
One is everyone looks to you. Especially if you worked your way up the ranks and this is a relatively new role for you. Other people scream and yell and try to get a point across. You whisper a subtle idea on the side and it becomes directive.
Oh, man, I've been there. so that's a great one. Yep.
That's in terms of focus on the business. That's in terms of cultural impact. You say, well, I just want to be myself and say whatever I want to say. And the answer is yes, be yourself, say what you want to say, but be aware that what you say and how you say it is going to have ripple implications everywhere. And that's not a problem. That's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to really lead and really excite and motivate folks. The other thing is you and your company are as good as the team around you. Build an unbelievable team. makes sure that team dynamic works. And team dynamic works is not you're just old buddies. It's you've got the right amount of diversity, the right amount of comfort challenging one another, but always with a deep respect. So kind of cultural development, building the right team. I'd say that if you don't have it, be crystal clear about your vision and your mission for the business and how you're going to get there, such that people can act relatively autonomously and still run fast towards the goal you're trying to get to. Those are kind of the big ones, maybe.
That's great. Those three were fantastic. I would say take time away from the business. I think it's really important to not stay in the business for too long without stepping out of it and going to a place where it's quiet and just be alone with your thoughts, or go to a place like we were talking about, a forum where there are other CEOs that you can really sort of learn from. Because when you come back, your perspective is so different. And that fresh perspective is so important to doing well in the role. I think that's one to consider for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, I would say get a coach as soon as you can, because then you have someone that can tell you the things that no one tells you about the role and helps you through those transitions that are invariably going to happen to you in the role.
And when thinking about a coach, again, lots of people there are a lot of tremendous coaches out there. I guess they're probably the opposite as well. Mm-hmm. Find someone that works for you and realize that there are two primary dimensions. One is someone who can help, who's kind of seen what you're going through and can help you, kind of identify things before you, brick walls before you hit them. So having some level of competence in terms of knowing what the job entails would be good. And then the other element is have someone who really you can connect with, empathetic and understanding, because it's as I said, it's lonely and you need someone to really, that you can really open up to.
So we both read Trillion Dollar Coach. I deeply enjoyed the book. A lot of the questions I asked you were around sort of asking about your style and to some extent comparing it to Bill Campbell. So for those of you who are listening, Bill Campbell is probably one of the, best coaches that has been around that you've never heard of. No one's ever really heard of Bill Campbell. That's a funny thing. He started out as a proper sports coach, coaching in college, started his career at Kodak, and then moved out to Silicon Valley, started working for Apple, moved on to Go Computer, which didn't go. If you read the book, you'll get that. And then eventually became the CEO of Intuit, right? And then from there, started coaching. So it's sort of a similar trajectory to you, where you started as a business person, went to some great organizations, just experienced a lot and grew a lot and took that wealth of experience and gave back, right? And started really coaching with some fantastic CEOs. He has coached Eric Schmidt. He's coached, the founders at Google. He's coached Ben Horowitz. He's coached, I think, a ton of people that you can't even imagine. And so the book was really for me just experiencing a couple of things, just what a coach is like and some of the challenges that he experienced coaching and helping managers through those challenges.
He starts with people. I mean, it's all about caring deeply about individuals and people and making certain they're successful and that their well-being is solid. Mm-hmm. He talks about only coaching the coachable. People have to be self-aware, or why bother?
So true.
He talks about, I love this one, guiding people to make the best decision for them, not the best decision, because everyone is different. And the decision is not, there's no such thing as a best decision. It's like where you are in your life, what you're doing and what your situation is and getting that. He went on to talk about if you don't have the basics right, forget it. So that's the operational cadence, the one-on-one, the employee feedback, team meetings, company meetings, all that stuff.
Yeah, I love that part of the book because he refers to Steve Jobs, who didn't
right.
who was considered one of the best leaders ever. And Steve had to go through pain, right, to learn the importance of the basics, right? And then he came back into his organization with that foundation, right? Having worked with Bill, and it completely changed the way he approached and probably set the foundation for for Apple's success on his return.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Another thing I liked about, he touched a lot about vulnerability and the importance of being vulnerable as a CEO.
The foundational component of a great team starts with trust. Mm-hmm. One of the ways to really make trust happen is to create vulnerability. Because when you break mm-hmm. down, when you break down your walls and you become vulnerable, others naturally will break down their walls. And then all of a sudden mm-hmm. you have open dialogue and communication, a real communication between people. So I think that's a great observation, John.
Yeah, that's one of my, that's one of the ones I take away.
I got another quote. It's from a football coach.
Okay.
This is Tom Landry, who was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I think over 29 mm-hmm. years. And it's a coach is someone who tells you what you don't want to hear, who has you see what you don't want to see, so you can be who you've always known you could be. And it's surfacing the stuff that is going to help you get better in substantial ways.
I love it. This has been great. How do people find you if people wanted to consider you for coaching?
100% of my clients have all been through word of mouth from other clients or mm-hmm. board members who not that I've talked to, but have seen me work with other CEOs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's KramerAdvisory.com online. It's not a big website. It's just there to answer some questions. My passion is in the founder CEOs. So I love mm-hmm. CEOs, but I also really love taking founders and letting them go the distance all the way. So anything I do. So that's mm-hmm. a particular area that interests me.
That's great. That's a great place to wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic and have a good weekend.
Excellent. My pleasure, John. Great talking to you as always.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of B2B Growth CEO Series. Again, I'm John Belizaire from the CEO Playbook. To reach Bob Kramer and learn more about his coaching, visit KramerAdvisory.com. That's Kramer with a C. To learn more about CEO coaching, go to CEOPlaybook.co. Please connect with me on LinkedIn, CEO Playbook, and Twitter, Jay Belizaire CEO. I'd love to hear from you. Send questions my way or recommendations at any time. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share it with a friend. It really helps. And if you have a question, join the discussion on Instagram at ceoplaybook.co. Thank you for tuning in and subscribing to B2B Growth. Until next time, keep pushing and stay healthy out there.
I hate it when podcasts incessantly ask their listeners for reviews, but I get why they do it, because reviews are enormously helpful when you're trying to grow a podcast audience. So here's what we decided to do. If you leave a review for B2B Growth in Apple Podcasts and email me a screenshot of the review to james@sweetfishmedia.com, I'll send you a signed copy of my new book, Content-Based Networking, How to Instantly Connect with Anyone You Want to Know. We get a review, you get a free book. We both win.